pulled back. With her keen attention to communication, Lul didn't doubt that she saw the shift. The purpling. Surely you haven't forgotten. Come, come, Mr. Pell. You can't expect the people of Didet to believe that even at this momentous occasion you could forget the event.
Oh, shit.
Lul automatically looked up through the ceiling, really noticing for the first time the rosy tone of the late Fa Pale.
Oh, shit.
Dude. Hark and Po spoke as one. Even Reno Dotto looked shocked.
I didn't even... With all the excitement, I've totally lost track of time.
Time, Mr. Pell? The searcher leaned toward him, making room for the camera arm to follow his path. We're not talking about working through lunch break. We're talking about the end of the Fa decade, about a planetary event that happens once every generation. Hark leaned in and hissed.
We're talking about the barbecue. Your parents are having like 100 people over. We're all packed to head out there. You forgot?
Lul could only look around him, open-mouthed and speechless. He had forgotten. Not only had he forgotten, but judging from the conversations at the landing site, he'd bet most of the ground crews had forgotten as well. He could feel that flicker of terror flame up in his chest once again that somehow the Urfers had hypnotized them all, that they had a master plan. How else could an entire worksite of people forget that within just a few shifts all the suns of Didet would drop below the horizon? Even Fa, the ever-present sun. It only happened once every 11 or 12 red years, maybe half a dozen times in anyone's lifetime. Everything came to a stop at the purpling. Everyone went home. Everyone. As the purpling moved over the planet, every family, every city, every country had their traditions and festivals and celebrations. Nobody forgot the purpling. Nobody. Ever. Until now. The searcher's tone sounded sharp and predatory, a tone that used to thrill Lul when he watched the man on his program. Now it made Lul's teeth itch to clamp shut and grind.
Let's talk about that ship. It can't be a coincidence that they've come to us at our most vulnerable.
Without him noticing it, Meg had slid her hand beneath the table. She now gripped his thigh, her long fingers nearly spanning the width of his leg, her fingers pressing into his flesh. Her free hand moved over the screen, but her eyes never left the searcher. Meg, talk. Her fingers flew among the text boxes. This is who?
I am the searcher.
He tilted the microphone toward her, and Lul saw the corners of her mouth twist up. It was a look he'd seen before, a look she'd worn when approached by Bado.
I'd like to ask you some questions, Meg.
Lul started to translate, but Meg interrupted him. Yes, okay. Meg, talk. She turned to Lul. Lul, talk this. This. This is who? Talk this.
You can talk to me.
The searcher jabbed the microphone in closer, and Meg held her slender wrist up to stop it from coming too close. She raised her gaze to the standing reporter, and Lul thought you didn't have to be psychic, or Urfer, to understand her meaning. If he kept poking that microphone at her face, she was going to give it the same treatment she had given the camera. Lul tapped his knuckles.
She just wants your name. Names are important when you don't have a lot of vocabulary. It's standard practice at the landing site to make sure both sides can pronounce the names. It's just... polite.
He turned as much as he could to face Meg, purposely giving his shoulder to the camera and carefully enunciated the words.
The searcher. The searcher.
Meg mouthed along with him several times before attempting the sounds herself. The syllables came out breathy, the harder sounds impossible for her slender throat to make. Finally, she came out with something sounding more like Hatador, and Lul gave her a yes.
Close enough.
Okay. Meg looked back to the searcher. Meg, talk, Hatador. Meg need want Hatador talk. She pumped her hand palm down over the table.
She'd like you to lower your voice. Her hearing is very sensitive.
The searcher spared the crowded social center a skeptical glance and then nodded.
All right, Mr. Pell. Meg?
I'll keep my voice low, but the questions remain the same. Meg, why are you here? Meg cocked her head as the translation played out in her ear. Meg here. Lul take Meg to see Didet. To see Didetto, Lul Didetto. She smiled at Lul's friends. Is good okay, very good okay in Didet, very... She raised her hands above and before her, the long fingers waving like river reeds from her slender palms as she smiled up at them. Very good okay.
This is very different from the landing site, Lul said. Obviously there we're outside. It's not very crowded. The music, the people, the vendors. She seems to be really enjoying.
You're kidding me, right? The searcher scowled at Lul. That evasion crap may work with the morons at the Space Administration, but we both know that's not an answer. Meg, I know you know what I am asking you. Why are the Urfers here on Didet? Lul hoped she wouldn't try to play coy. Meg could be incredibly charming, but the searcher wasn't going to give himself over to her thrall. Lul didn't doubt that his agenda was exactly the opposite of Lul's. The searcher wanted the news to be bad. He wanted to be known as the man who discovered the Urfers had malicious intent. Even if it meant the enslavement of the entire planet, Lul knew the searcher would revel in being the man who uncovered the truth. He was probably already pre-recording messages for the rebellion he no doubt planned on heading up. Lul felt his stomach twist as he realized just how well he knew the agenda of the man before him. Meg remained still for a long moment, her eyes on the reporter. The camera whirled in closer, and it seemed to Lul she was allowing it to set up the shot before she answered. Urfer's here to see.
To see what?
To see all. To see this. To learn.
Why?
Meg's head snapped up at the question like she'd been surprised. Why?
Yes, the searcher asked, his voice hard and low. Why? Why do you want to see?
She turned to Lul as if he could explain this to her. Lul said nothing, just urged her to answer with his eyes. Her eyes narrowed briefly before facing her interrogator again. Urfers need want to see. Need want to learn. Very need want. The searcher growled low in his throat.
What do the Urfers need want to learn?
She held her hands out wide. Much. All. Very all. Meg talk Hatador question. She leaned forward on her elbows, her thin arms breaking into the light screen, her bony shoulder carriage riding up as she craned her long neck up at the searcher. Didetto not need want to see? Hatador not need want? Why Hatador has this? She flicked the microphone with a fingertip so quickly the searcher jumped back from the table. Meg was on the offensive. She leaped up like a snake shooting from the grass, her long fingers capturing the camera orb. This time she didn't smack it away. Instead, she grabbed the orb, her fingers somehow finding purchase on the metal, and pulled the orb close. Lul could see the muscles in her arms bunching as she fought with the operator to draw the camera close to her face. She didn't look into the lens. She pulled it in close to the searcher, turning it so it stared into his face. Why Hatador has this? To see. To learn. Yes? Yes?
Yes.
His face flushed deep red.
Yes. To learn the truth. To see the truth and tell it to the world. The truth you still haven't given us. Meg tossed the camera away from her grip, and this time Lul was certain the camera operator fell over. The camera arm swung wildly up over the back of the booth as the searcher banged his fists against the table. "The people of Didet deserve the truth," he yelled into his microphone. "There are ships amassing in orbit over our planet. You have made inroads in our culture. It's a fact that you've interfered with communication all over the country as you raid our databases for information. So don't tell me that this is just some sightseeing trip to the country. Tell me the truth." Everyone jumped when Meg slammed her hands down flat on the table. For just a second, Lul thought she might strike out at the searcher, smacking him like she'd smacked the camera. Instead, she blew out a loud breath and folded herself back down onto the seat and turned to Lul. "Talk this."
"What?"
"This." She waved her hand over the text boxes. "Talk this. Talk this Hatador say." Without a chance to catch himself, Lul barked out a laugh. It was the wrong reaction, he knew, but he couldn't stop himself. One laugh led to another, and in no time he was reduced to loud, huffing snorts. Hark and Reno Dotto sat frozen, hands over mouths, Poe looking pale enough to faint, and the searcher looked within an inch of punching Meg in the face. Only Meg seemed undisturbed by Lul's reaction. Her eyes widened, but she smiled, an easy smile, the smile she showed him a lot. She'd told him before that she liked his laugh. Apparently, she liked it even when it was completely out of place.
"What the hell is so funny, pal?"
Lul clenched his teeth, trying to rein in his nervous laughter before answering.
"I'm sorry, but could you repeat the question?"
Poe snorted out a laugh, followed by Hark. Reno Dotto kept her hand over her mouth, but Lul could see her smiling.
"Maybe I didn't make this clear earlier. The Urfers don't actually speak Kartar. We're lucky to distinguish the difference between edible foodstuffs and pants. I appreciate the fact that you've got a show to produce, but if you want this to make any sense at all, you're going to want to keep the grandstanding to a minimum. It's wasted here."
Lul and his friends may have been amused, but the searcher most definitely was not. He leaned in close to Meg and shouted,
"How many Urfers are coming?"
Lul shot his arm out to hold the man back, but Meg's light touch stopped him.
"One." "Bullshit! How many Urfer ships are out there? How many are coming to Didet?"
"One." The searcher's face turned redder than his shirt.
"How many Urfers are on the ship that is orbiting the planet? How many soldiers are you bringing? If you think I'm going to turn my world over to you and your goon squads, you can think again. I want an answer. You tell me. You tell the people of Kartar, of the world, how many Urfers are on that ship?"
The louder he yelled, the stiller Meg grew. She waited until he finished his last tirade to wipe the globs of spit off her cheeks with delicate fingertips, making a show of drying her hands on her shirt and then folding them before her. She spoke in a soft, breath-filled tone.
"One."
The searcher punched the table and pushed back.
"This is useless. She's playing with us. They're all playing with us. Pell, you listen to me. You're going to go down in history as the man who let these monsters onto our planet. You understand that? Your name, your family's name, will forever be associated with the ruin of Didet. Are you prepared for that?"
Lul swallowed loudly. It seemed Meg wasn't the only one with the ability to cut right to the core of Lul's thoughts. That was an unpleasant realization. He tried and failed to find the words to defend himself. Surprising everyone, Poe broke in.
"Maybe she's telling the truth."
Everyone turned to Poe, who looked entirely comfortable with the attention. The searcher scowled at him with a look that said such an idea was beyond possibility, but Poe ignored him.
"Meg said the Urfers want to see. They want to learn. Isn't that the underlying premise of, like, 80% of the Magigan comics? The urge for scientists to explore and discover? I mean, they flew through space. Space! They didn't just build some crappy telecom satellites and call it a day. Maybe they're like the sea gods of the skies. Did you ever think of that?
Poe slid the scrapbook closer to Meg.
Her eyes watched his fingers as he flipped through the pages.
Here.
He pointed to a Magogan image that bore the wear and tear of frequent viewing. It was one of the older images in the book, cut from a classic edition of the Evanestas series where the reptilian Evanesta aliens invade Didet and spawn planet-wide mayhem. Even non-comic fans like Reno Dotto were familiar with the series, since it had been the basis for multiple TV, internet, and theater movies. The image Poe pointed to showed a heavily armored Evanesta bracing itself on its spiked tail to draw back a whipping cane over a bent and bloody Didetto child. All around the alien, other Didetto children crouched cowering, locked together with thick chains. Meg's eyes narrowed at the image.
This?
Do you really think she's going to tell you if that's what they have planned? The searcher spit on the ground. You said it yourself. They're not stupid. They're not going to give us any advance warning. Lul looked up at him.
You mean like sending a landing party to build a language?
If that's what they're here for. If you believe her.
I believe Meg.
Meg must have understood the words because she turned to him and smiled. Then she pointed to the comic book picture.
This? Lul talk this?
Lul didn't want to explain it to her. As much as he really desperately didn't want this to be the fate of Didet, even more he didn't want Meg to think anyone considered the Earthers capable of such dramatic violence. Face to face with Meg, a real alien who was no more reptilian than Reno Dotto, the whole scrapbook concept embarrassed him.
Some Didetto.
He waved his knuckles in the direction of the scowling reporter.
Think, have thoughts, that this is why Earthers are here. Earthers do this.
This?
She pointed to the whip.
To children? Why Earthers do this?
The searcher leaned in again. For world domination.
Meg squinted at Lul.
Lul thought this?
No.
Poe? Poe thought this?
Poe's mouth hung slack when Meg turned to him.
Not anymore.
Hatador thought this.
Yes, Hatador thought Earthers have not good bad to children.
Not just kids, sweetheart.
The searcher lined himself up for one of his classic confrontation shots.
I think you have plans for all Didetto. I think you're in collusion with the Kartar administration, letting them think they can make deals with you. Trade technology for a higher ranking when you colonize the planet. You've done your little mind tricks on them, convincing them to sell out their entire race for bigger scraps of food and nicer cages to live in.
Reno Dotto banged her fists on the table.
Do you even hear yourself? She's sitting right here. They've been here for, what, a week? Has anyone been hurt? Has there been even a single gunshot? I saw the footage. We're the ones with weapons trained on them. We're the ones with the army assembled. There are 5 of them. Why does everyone think that Didet is the center of the universe? What the hell are they going to get colonizing us? Dust?
They're going to get a planet full of free, submissive slave labor.
He slammed a photograph onto the table.
If they're not invading, why are their ships amassing in orbit? Why has this image been redacted from national weather imaging? Why is the administration hiding the truth? Answer me, Meg.
Meg pulled the photo up from beneath the light screen. Lul heard her breathe out a quiet word and she dropped the picture. Her fingers moved through the text boxes, whipping through the database until a photograph appeared on screen. It was another Earther in a stiff fabric overshirt staring unsmiling at the camera. This Earther had black hair and black eyes, but its skin was somewhat paler than Agnar's, the Earther's leader. Meg pointed to the picture and spoke a word. Over the din of the social center and the searcher's muttered complaints, It took several tries before Lul could get it.
Rarinson. This is Rarinson.
She tapped her knuckles and then pointed to the ship. Here. Poe traced his finger over the edge of the photo box. Rarinson's on the ship? Just him? Lul leaned in to see the picture more clearly.
I think that's a female.
He nudged Meg with his shoulder.
Only Rarinson on ship? One Urfer?
Yes. Bullshit. Nobody flies a mission with just 6 people. Hark snorted.
And we know this because we've done so many missions. Oh, that's right, we can't even get out of the atmosphere.
While the searcher shouted directions to his cameraman to resituate himself, Meg flipped the light screen up once more. Only this time she used it to wall the angry reporter away from the table. When he saw the light box swing up in his direction, his mouth dropped open. When Meg ran her fingers along the control slide, making the screen opaque, he growled. Meg no talk to Hatador. Hatador talk much big. She smiled at the group. Reno Dotto smiled back. He does talk too big. Too loud. They could see his raised fists behind the screen. Lul snickered.
How long do you think it'll take him to figure out that the screen is just light? That he can stick his head through it? We've been moving through it the whole time.
I'm not going to tell him, Poe said. It is kind of cool that he came, though. Mr. Pell! The searcher resorted to shouting as if from a deep hole. Ask her how many ships there are. Ask her how they plan to disarm our military forces. Ask them how many of us they plan to spare. Ask her, Mr. Pell. See if she'll tell you the truth. Can I? Poe leaned forward on his forearms to better see Meg's face. Can I ask you a question, Meg? Will you tell me the truth? Meg talk Poe, yes, good, okay. Poe stared at her face, his eyes moving over her hair and the long, narrow cheeks. Meg, can I see your ship? Chapter 18. Meg. Well, that hadn't gone as planned. That Hatador fellow, whoever he was, turned the whole happy occasion on its ear. The weird thing was that she kind of liked the guy. Liked may not be the right word. She kind of understood him. There was something familiar about him, about his attitude and his stance and his persistence. In the whirlwind of this entire experience, it had occurred to Meg more than once to wonder why Lul and his people weren't more curious about them. Sure, they had examined them and shared information. They had brought what looked like an entire army to guard them, or maybe to protect themselves. But even with Bado and the Blackshirt crews, with the generals and the press conferences, the Didetto as a whole were just so polite. It was kind of unnerving. Meg kept thinking about Prater's comment that if their positions were switched, if the Didetto had approached from the sky, Earther forces would probably have shot them before they made landfall. Cho hadn't found the jokes about dissection and experimentation in the least amusing, and she knew it was because he didn't find the idea too far-fetched, at least not from an Earther standpoint. But here on Didet, 5 strange creatures had dropped from the sky with a 6th circling the planet, and only this Hatador fellow seemed inclined to shake his fist and demand answers. Not that she wasn't thankful. Heaven knew she'd stretched the bounds of even Lul's wide trust by not telling him about Aronson and the Damocles. But even knowing how shocked he must have been when Hatador told him about the ship coming into a detectable orbit, still Lul had trusted her. Still he had given her the benefit of the doubt. It sounded like even his friends did. Would she have done the same? A diplomat and protocol specialist, would she have stuck with her gut even when all the evidence pointed to signs that her contact had been hiding information? She didn't want to think about that. What she had to face now was that Hatador wasn't going to hide behind that screen forever. It did make her laugh that he couldn't figure out the barricade was nothing but light. He might be persistent and nosy, but clearly he was no genius.
Lul and his friends were discussing something, and now it looked like Poe wanted to see the ship. The girl cut him off after that question, and another hurried discussion arose. All four leaned forward on their arms, their thrums back in that mesmerizing harmony. She wished she could understand what they talked about. Pro Ling Lang picked up a few phrases, but she couldn't make sense of them. Family was mentioned. The generals came up, as did the wind truck. Hark seemed displeased when he mentioned Tut, but one word kept tripping up the translation. It had to be a misunderstanding, a homonym of some sort, but it sounded like they kept referring to something purple. She just couldn't be as polite as the Didetto. If the Damocles had been spotted, Captain Wagner and the crew were no doubt facing tough questions. She had to get back to the landing site. Plus, depending on how the Shellian crystal was recuperating and how well Jefferson's quest for Class 4 silicates was going, she might have plenty of time to chit-chat with Lul and his friends, more time than she ever dreamed of having. So whatever purple thing they were discussing was going to have to wait. Lul. She put her hand on his wrist, stopping him mid-gesture. Meg, go back. Meg, go to Urfer's. Meg, need want, go back. She pointed to the countdown clock on the screen. It wasn't counting down anything right now on her screen, but he knew what it meant. Poe leaned in close.
Meg? Poe go with Meg to Urfer's?
Yes. Lul had a lot to say to that, his thrum hitching and his knuckles grinding into the table. From the way he punched the air toward the guards lined up behind the still-shouting Hatador, she guessed he thought they might not be keen to the idea.
Why Poe not go? Poe and Lul Didetto, yes? I'll go with Meg Lul.
She didn't need to see Lul's hand on the screen to see his maybe face. He drew into himself when he spoke.
Is not okay bad to generals, no?
She heard the collective thrum soften, and to her untrained ear it sounded like a sigh. It wasn't a happy sound.
Lul talk is good, okay. Lul need want Didetto go with?
He tapped his knuckles. Before he could start to explain why it couldn't happen, and Meg had a pretty good idea what he was going to say, she reached past him and drew back the light screen. Hatador toppled onto the table, his face and his lips shiny with spit.
Hatador go with Didetto, yes? See Urfer's?
Lul nearly choked, his thrum hiccuping, and Meg saw the gazes of his friends fall away. Hatador ground out something between his teeth, his tone rough. She picked out the words generals and guns, and a reference to something black and purple. Feeling just overwhelmed enough to risk being cocky on Lul's behalf, Meg played her bluff.
Lul talk okay good is okay good. Lul talk generals. Generals talk yes. Yes?
All eyes watched her. Hatador seemed the first to get her meaning. Keeping her tone as matter-of-fact as she could manage, unnecessary since even Lul probably couldn't tell the difference, she explained the situation to Lul's friends the way she wanted them to see it, the way she believed it should have been anyway.
Lul talk yes and generals talk no. This is yes. Lul talk no and generals talk yes. This is no. Yes? Lul talk. Generals here. Urfer's here. Lul is...
She plucked at the front of her shirt the way she'd seen Lul do in the wind truck when he'd mentioned the black shirt crews. She hoped she had it right, that the gesture meant important, not pompous or abusive. His three friends sat back a bit, their eyes wide. Hatador smiled another sharp smile. Lul seemed the last to absorb her message. She brought it home.
Lul has wind truck. Lul talk all go is good okay, all go. Is good okay, Lul?
Lul's mouth opened and closed several times. Hatador punched his arm softly, pushing him back into the booth.
Lul gripped the table and then pounded his knuckles.
Is good okay?
Lul. He didn't know how it happened or how he had pulled it off or what was going to be waiting for him when they landed, but somehow he found himself loading his friends and the searcher onto the air van, followed by Meg and only four of the guards who now had seats. He drew the line at the cameraman, insisting the outside media cross the lines of security. The searcher pulled out a small handheld box camera that Lul approved with authority that he came nowhere near possessing. Everyone seemed to take it in stride, accepting his instructions and following his orders. The soldiers had balked at first, but with all eyes, including Meg's, on him, he'd held his ground and ordered the remaining guards to head back to the landing site by car. He did catch Hark throwing him a side eye once or twice, biting back a laugh of disbelief, and he knew his best friend could sense that Lul was just in over his head. But bluffing or not, they were all in an air van with armed guards and an alien flying over Kartar and heading for the spaceship at the Roana Temple as the sky turned bluer and bluer. Even Hark couldn't argue with those facts. General Ada seemed prepared to argue, however, when they touched down on the edge of the landing site. He'd come out by himself to meet the air van, the guards obviously having radioed ahead to prepare him. Anger flew off him like sparks as he bellowed, "What the hell?" and "Are you out of your mind?" at Lul multiple times in no discernible order. It was as if his rage had scrambled his meaning, overwhelming all need to communicate anything but loud bursts of sound. Lul knew he'd have enough of this to spare for possibly the rest of his life, so instead he concentrated on helping the still-smiling Meg from the air van, followed a grinning Hark, an open-mouthed Poe, the smirking searcher, and, funniest of all, the lovely Reno Dotto, who actually held up her hand to silence the general while she finished her phone call with her mother.
"Okay," Reno Dotto said, turning off her phone and slipping it into her pocket. "Mom is making our apologies to your mother. I told her that while the purpling may happen only a few times in our lives, experiencing it at the Roana Temple with extraterrestrials was definitely a once-in-a-lifetime experience. She sends her love and said she'll save you a big bowl of checha soup, but only if you promise to take lots of pictures. You know Mom. She's a nut for her photo albums. What is that man yelling about?"
"That's General Ada,"
Lul said, leaning in under the pretense of being heard over the red-faced man's shouts. In fact, he wanted, as always, to catch a whiff of Reno Dotto's skin.
"He's one of the ranking generals on site, and he's a little pissed that I brought unauthorized civilians inside the barricade. You know, national security."
Reno Dotto smiled at him with a slight tease in her eyes.
"Well, Meg says you're the ranking figure on the site. Meg says they do what you say, right? After all, you're Lul Pell. You don't need a black shirt to be boss, do you?"
She bumped him with her shoulder, making him laugh. Her fingers brushed against the inside of his wrist.
"I know I've always teased you about all this alien stuff. I mean, with Poe being Poe, how could I help it?"
She ducked her head, and Lul thought the blush on the edges of her face might be from more than just the change in the light.
"But part of me always sort of hoped you were right. I spend all day long doing these boring finance transfers, and when I would hear you all talking about it, when I'd hear all those ideas you had, I'm just really glad you were right."
She squeezed his wrist before stepping away and laughing.
"Now let's go see that spaceship before Poe pees in his pants."
Poe charged ahead like a pummel star, almost in full crouch from his excitement. He waved his fists and yelled out descriptions, even though Lul stood less than 5 feet from him. When they cleared the inner barricade and the ruins of the temple came into sight, complete with the Urfer's spaceship perched atop it, even Poe fell silent. Reno Dotto gripped his arm, and Hark dropped into a deep, breathless crouch. The searcher broke the silence. "The Roana Temple. They had to have known where to land. This can't be a coincidence that they would choose to land on the Sea God's footstep."
"They haven't really explained why they landed here. I mean, they've barely explained why they landed on Didet at all."
Lul watched the reporter gaze at the ship.
"You don't really think they're trying to invade, do you? Not really, right?"
I'll reserve judgment until I've had a chance to see for myself.
I think you'll be surprised at what you see. They're very peaceful people.
Lul walked closer to the site, more intent on watching his friend's reactions than noticing the change in demeanor of the workers around him. He had just noticed the Effins huddled together, rocking back and forth in distress, when he heard one of the Urfers shout Meg's name louder than he'd heard any Urfer speak so far. Meg jumped at the sound, running ahead to her crew. Poe watched her run, making sounds of awe at the incredible distance her long, spindly legs could cover.
Look at that. How do they keep their legs from snapping at that speed? And what's that one doing? What's that tool? Is that a tool? Or a gun? What's it doing? Why is it hitting the temple? Hey!
His shout mingled with others who rushed forward toward the ship in outrage. One of the Urfers, Chefson it looked like, was swinging a heavy metal bar over and over against the edge of the slab beneath the ship. He made a high-pitched, harsh sound as the metal made contact again and again against the tan rock, dust and pebbles flying everywhere. Cracks snaked across the surface of the slab as he continued to hammer with the bar. Two of Kik's crew rushed forward, shocked into action at the desecration of the sacred site. Mill reached the Urfer first, crashing into the alien at stomach level, sending the long-legged creature to the ground and the metal bar flying.
"What's happening?" Hark asked, or maybe it was the searcher.
Lul didn't listen but ran ahead, trying to catch up with Meg, who was being held by the leader. He held her in his dark hands, gripping the edges of her arms, shaking her hard, snapping her head back.
Meg.
Did you have a good time, Meg?
Wagner grabbed her by the shoulders. She could feel the strength in his hands.
Did you get some shopping done? Maybe stop for lunch? Did you make some new friends?
Captain, what? I told Cho. I just went to see Didet before... He stopped shaking her, holding her still and very close to his face.
Before what? Before we left? You shouldn't have hurried, Meg. Looks like you're going to have plenty of time to see the sights. We all are. All the time in the world.
They heard Jefferson grunt as the Didetto engineer tackled him. The wrench flew from his hands and landed near Cho's feet. Cho didn't move. He just stayed where he sat, legs crossed, elbows on his knees, eyes down. Jefferson used leverage and rage to dislodge himself from the heavy Didetto wrestling with him. When he saw Meg, he stopped.
You.
With one word, Meg felt her knees threaten to buckle. The look in his eyes, the sound of that one word slipping from his lips made her wish that he'd punched her in the face instead.
Will somebody explain to me what's going on?
Jefferson spat on the ground, turning away from her. Wagner pulled in a deep breath and blew it out noisily. When he looked into Meg's face, he had a tighter rein on his emotions.
The crystal is dying.
But Aronson said...
Aronson said the crystal needs an injection of Class 4 silicates, which we cannot find.
Meg tried to let the message sink in, but the words jumbled up in her brain, dropping in broken, unconnected pieces.
Aronson. She's coming down?
Wagner shook his head.
But she has to. If she stays...
Yeah.
Wagner's shoulders drooped.
She won't abandon the ship.
Prater looked up from the toolbox she'd been staring into, pointedly not looking at Meg.
It's a deep space thing. You wouldn't understand.
It's a ship thing,
Jefferson said.
So we're pretty much in the minority in understanding that little bit of knowledge.
His Galen drawl rolled the words out thick. He stalked away from her toward Prater, who handed him another heavy wrench. Meg knew she should just walk away. She didn't understand what was going on, but couldn't stop herself from asking.
Are you sure there aren't any of those silicates? Anywhere? Did the computer find...
Class 4 silicates, Meg.
Jefferson shouted, moving toward her with the wrench held like a club.
Officer Dupree.
He spit the words.
It might behoove you to learn the proper terminology if you're going to be undertaking a mission of this scope. The Shellian crystal needs an injection of Class 4 silicates, a source of which I cannot locate on this godforsaken planet.
He held up his hand to stop her from speaking.
Oh, there are traces of it. God knows I've found traces of it in the rain runoff, in sediment. Dusty little sparkles of it all over the place. But at this point, we need to find approximately enough Class 4 to fill the cargo hold and the passenger deck to the walls. And if we found it, and if Prater could get to the sub to launch with the weight, and if the crystal hasn't decayed to the point of no return, maybe, just maybe, we could hump and jump out of here. But there's really no point in worrying about that, is there? Because your boys here think they know where the silicates are. They're pretty sure they know where all these traces are coming from, but they can't be totally sure. You know why?
Meg shook her head.
Because they're in the ocean.
Jefferson's voice dropped low as he leaned in close.
Yeah, they think the silicates are on the sea floor, but they're really not sure. You know why?
She wished he would stop asking her that.
Because they've never been to sea.
Meg blinked, not understanding.
You heard me. They have never been in the water. Never.
Jefferson gripped the wrench with both hands like he planned to bend it, to wrap it around her neck.
A billion people on a planet that is 70% water, and they have never thrown a fucking piece of wood into the sea and thought, hey, we could float on that. Never.
Really?
Really. And since we have no submersible equipment on the shuttle and time isn't exactly on our side...
Meg wasn't listening. Without her bidding, the sociologist within her tried to make sense of the bewildering revelation. Didn't you say the landmass of the planet is an unbroken ring at the equator? Maybe that's why. Maybe they've never needed to cross it. Or maybe it's sacred. Maybe their mythology... Don't you dare! Prater sent her toolbox clattering to the ground with a sharp kick. She ignored the mess as she stormed over, jabbing her finger in Meg's face.
Don't you fucking dare give us that protocol shit. Not now. Not when Aronson is gone. Not when these fucking monkeys could have saved her, saved all of us, if they'd gotten off their fat, lazy asses and looked around their own fucking planet.
What are you talking about? Meg felt her own temper rise. They've got a whole culture, a whole world. So they're not like us, not exactly like us. What makes us so perfect? This is exactly the kind of xenophobic shit that's been the cause of every major war and holocaust. The Evangihad, for fuck's sake. Or have you already forgotten that?
Don't you say that word.
Prater shoved her with both hands, but Meg caught her wrists, fighting the urge to twist them and drop the smaller woman to the ground.
Aronson lost her husband in that attack. Aronson lost everything in that, so you don't get to talk about it.
Me? She threw Prater's wrists away from her, still tempted to start punching. What does that mean? Why is everyone pissed at me? How exactly is this, any of this, my fault?
Like you don't know, Prater said.
Jefferson snorted an ugly laugh.
She doesn't. She never could.
Wary confusion overrode anger and Meg stiffened.
Don't understand what?
Cho spoke up.
Drop it, you two.
Drop what?
Prater stepped in close enough for Meg to smell the motor oil in her hair. She looked up into Meg's face with cold eyes.
You should never have been allowed on this mission. You have no idea how the crystal works.
Can it, Prater?
Wagner said, his voice tired.
Leave it alone.
No, tell me.
It knew.
The smaller woman nodded as she spoke.
It knew all along that you didn't want to be there. It knew you hated space. We all knew. We all knew how much you hated the black and how much you hated being out deep. And if we knew it, you can bet your ass the crystal knew it too.
Meg waited for any of this to make sense. When Prater said nothing more, she shook her head.
You have got to be kidding me. You think I caused the crystal to die? You think it read my mind and lost its will to live because I don't jump up and down and stick my hand down my pants every time we leave orbit? It's a propulsion crystal. It's a chemical reaction, not a mood ring. And you call these people stupid? She didn't think it was possible for Prater to get any closer, but the smaller woman did, stepping so close to Meg that their shirts rubbed against each other. Meg couldn't believe any of this. Couldn't believe she stood toe-to-toe with the engineer, seconds away from a fistfight over something so incredibly stupid. When Prater's arm shot up, Meg drew back her own arm, ready to defend herself. Instead of hitting her, however, Prater snatched the chain around Meg's neck, whipping her hand back and snapping the old clasp. She leaped back, taunting Meg with the locket dangling from her wrist. "Give me that!" Meg's mouth went dry.
"Tell me something. Tell me the truth."
Prater swung the locket, turning her body to keep it out of reach as Meg lurched for it.
"In your heart of hearts, tell me you didn't want to stay here. Tell me you haven't been dreaming of spending the rest of your miserable life on this dry rock, chit-chatting with your little boyfriend, never having to step foot into the Damocles again. Tell me the truth, Meg."
"Give me that locket, or I swear to God, Prater, I'll kill you."
"Who's in the locket, huh, Meg? A boyfriend? A girlfriend?"
"Knock it off, Prater," Cho warned, rising to his feet. "Give her the locket."
But Prater ignored him, dancing backward, keeping her arm and the locket out of Meg's desperate reach.
"Is it Mommy and Daddy? Is that who it is? Mommy and Daddy who didn't love you enough? Who weren't proud of you and made you run away to try to be a big shot? What did they do, Meg, huh? Did they fight all the time and make you be the little peacemaker?"
Meg could hardly see through the tears that rose up as she jumped and clawed for the other woman's hand.
"Shut your mouth, Prater!"
"Shut it? But that's not what you want, is it? That's not what you do. You talk. You talk and talk and get other people to talk so that everybody is talking and talking and everybody's friends, right? Because we're all supposed to be friends. We're all supposed to like each other and respect each other and be interested in each other because everyone has a story. Isn't that what you said to me once? Everyone has a story."
"Prater, please," Meg sobbed, needing the locket like she needed her next breath. Prater's face was ugly with contempt.
"Everyone has a story. Even short, stupid, hairy, passive little monkeys like these freaks that we're stuck with."
She hurled the locket over Meg's head, aiming for and hitting a wide-eyed Lul in the forehead with it.
"You got your wish. You can sit and talk yourself to death with them now. Hear all their stories and tell them all of yours. Oh, but don't bother telling them the Three Men in a Tub story or Jonah and the Whale. They won't get it."
Prater turned away as Meg rushed toward Lul, sprawling on her knees in the dirt looking for the locket. Lul crouched down in front of her. Tears made her blind and she clawed at the ground uselessly. Her breath caught when Lul opened his fist, the dented locket resting on the tender pink pad of his palm. It looked so small there, so old and battered, that she could only sob. Tears ran off her cheeks as she dropped her forehead against the locket, pressing her weight into Lul's solid hand.
"Meg."
Meg raised her head, blinking away the tears to see Lul's worried eyes. His thrum was hushed and jagged, no longer in sync with his friends or anyone at the worksite. Behind him, Didetto crews clustered, pressing against each other in anxiety. "Lul."
"Meg."
He moved to brush his knuckles against her cheek and then changed his mind. Opening his fingers, he dragged the tender pads of his fingertips through the dampness of her skin. A lock of hair clung to her cheek, and he felt the fine strands tickle his sensitive pads. She put her head back down in his other palm, and he could feel the hard metal pressed between them. The littlest Urfer had ripped it off of Meg's neck, making Meg chase and yell for it. It looked like a game, a child's game, but even with the little he understood of Urfer body language, Lul knew this was no game. Something had changed. Chaos surrounded him. The Effins,
Kick and his crew, Olam, and all the worksite crews crouched and muttered together, bewildered by the explosion of noise and motion from the otherwise placid aliens. Mill and two other engineers examined the fractured slab of the temple for damage from Chefson's blows. The generals shouted orders that nobody listened to, and from what he could hear, Poe was on the brink of exploding from curiosity. Lul ignored them all, focusing instead on the delicate knobs of Meg's spine that arced beneath her thin shirt as she hung her head in his palm. Feet shuffled, voices rose and fell, and he ignored them all until something metallic crashed close to his feet. Meg's head snapped up, the small ornament sticking to her forehead for just a moment before dropping back into his palm. To his right, Lul saw the broken frame of a box camera. Cho and the searcher stood facing each other, the reporter's hands out and apart as if he still held the camera. Despite his thin frame, the Urfer loomed over the searcher, hand drawn back up, ready to whip out with that unreal precision to strike anything else the man decided to point at Meg. The searcher stayed very still, eyes locked on Cho's wet stare. They really don't like cameras, do they? As the searcher lowered his hands, Cho relaxed, keeping an eye on the man as he folded his long legs down to Meg's level. Meg sat back on her heels, graceless. She took the round piece of metal from Lul's hand, her fingernails tickling the sensitive skin, and wiped her face with the back of her fist. The ornament's chain bounced against her wrist as she smeared muddy streaks across her nose and cheeks.
Meg.
Cho spoke, his voice so low Lul wouldn't have heard it but for the earpiece he wore. Lul watched with a mix of worry and envy as Cho said words to her that made the water stop running from her eyes. He heard the sound of Meg's name the way it was supposed to be spoken, the way his Didetto mouth could never manage. Cho's long brown hands feathered across her cheeks with a gracefulness only the Urfers knew, smoothing back her hair behind her ear, running a bony thumb over the fading imprint the ornament had left on her forehead. Meg let Cho guide her to her feet. His long fingers tangled with hers, releasing the ornament. Slowly and with a precision Lul could only dream of, Cho maneuvered the ends of the chain, his fingernails catching on a release so small it was nearly invisible. Meg watched as he twisted and manipulated the fine chain until he achieved something that made Meg sigh. Cho held up both ends of the chain, the ornament hanging between them. Meg turned and Cho reached over her. When the ornament touched her chest, she pressed it to her, dropping her head, exposing the long line of her neck. Cho leaned in, staring intently as his fingers worked the chain until the two ends joined. When he finished, he put his hands on her shoulders and pressed his lips where his fingers had just been. Meg looked at Lul, her eyes red, her pale skin blotchy and smudged. Her lips parted and she looked like she might speak, but she just drew in a shuddery breath. He wanted to step in closer to her. He wanted her to tell him what was happening, what that ornament was, and why, if it was so important to her that she would crawl around in the dirt for it, would she not have shown it to him before? He wanted to know why Chefson and Agnar and Prater were vocalizing so loudly and harshly, and why Chefson had damaged the slab. He didn't get a chance to ask any of those questions because Poe charged in, fists waving, face red from exertion.
What the hell? What are they doing?
Poe stared from Meg to Cho to Lul.
They're banging on the temple? They're going to get shot!
Lul shook his head, but Poe punched his shoulder, pointing to the barricade. Soldiers were lining up with shields and rolling palm cannons. The three generals stomped in uneven lines before them, shouting orders and listening to orders being shouted through radios. All eyes moved from the guns to the slab. The searcher grabbed Lul's arm.
Son, if you know what they're doing, you'd better explain it to those soldiers right now. Once those cannons are activated, it's going to take more than diplomacy to turn them off. Can you think of any good reasons they'd be defacing the temple slab? Have they destroyed anything else? This isn't a time to be coy, pal. If she's told you anything, you had better come clean or this is going to get ugly really fast.
Nothing.
Lul watched Cho lead Meg away toward their shelter. Prater had returned to her toolbox, and Chefson and the leader stood together talking and shaking their heads. Chefson still wielded that heavy metal bar.
They've never shown any interest in the slab before. The ship did some damage when they landed, burned off the top edges, but as far as I know, they've never even poked at it.
Did anyone tell them it's sacred?
Sacred?
Lul punched his hips in frustration.
We can't even find the word for lunch. You think we managed to catch up on religion? I don't even know if they have gods.
The generals finished their tirade, stepping away from the now organized soldiers. The palm cannons whined as their ignition switches activated. The searcher sighed.
Well, if they do have gods, any more damage to the slab is a good way to get back to see them.
Chapter 19. Meg. Cho kept his hand on the back of her neck. She sweated against his palm, the sun and her anger making her too hot, but she didn't move away. He felt solid and calm. He felt like he could single-handedly keep her world from blowing to pieces. She could feel the bent clasp of the locket chain pressing into her skin, and that little point of pain helped her focus.
Meg.
Cho's grip tightened at the sound of Lul's yell.
This isn't the time, Meg. Trust me, it would be better if he gave us all a little room.
It's not his fault.
It's nobody's fault.
He pulled her closer, turning her to face him.
It isn't. They're angry. They've been busting their asses trying to find that silicate. Jefferson's been a crazy person tearing through files. He's only half-hinged as it is, and when he found out the silicate might be on the seafloor, he just fell apart. It's such a stupid situation. To be this close to what we need and not be able to reach it. Boats. We came all this way through space and were stopped because we don't have a boat.
It's not their fault.
Meg looked up at Cho, keeping her neck long so he wouldn't move his hand.
It's not my fault. You know this isn't how I wanted it to go, right?
Cho sighed a soft laugh.
You mean, do I think the crystal committed suicide because it read your mind? Of course not. But I'm not a deep spacer either, not like those three. Not like Aronson, it's just...
It's just what?
Lul shouted her name again, and Cho squeezed his eyes shut.
It's just that you wasted no time getting in tight with them. You let them in.
That's what I do. That's what my job is. That's why I'm here, why I made this mission in the first place. What was I supposed to do?
You left the site. You left the site on your own and went out with them when all of this was going down. We didn't know what was going to happen, and you just left us, Meg. You took off with your little friend. You weren't here when Aronson called in distress. You weren't here when she made her decision to stay with the ship. You came back here laughing and smiling like you'd just been to a party when...
Meg cut him off, dropping her head onto his shoulder. He rubbed her back, kissing the side of her face.
They'll come around. They have to, don't they? You're the only person that Didetto can talk to.
They heard Lul's breathless approach, the frantic hitch of his thrum as he stopped just a foot from where they stood. Cho muttered a curse as Meg lifted her head. They both knew she had to talk to him. He wasn't going to just go away. With a weary nod, he released her and she turned to her fidgeting Didetto friend.
Meg.
He waved his fists in either direction. To his left, he jabbed toward the slab where Meg could see deep cracks crisscrossing the upper edges. To his right, he pointed to the approaching line of soldiers pushing carts holding blunt tubes.
Meg, not good, bad. Very.
The rest of the crew noticed the organized approach as well. Prater took her firearm from the toolbox drawer and slid it into the pocket of her pants. She kept her fingers on the end of the weapon. Meg saw Wagner unfasten his own gun pocket, knowing he kept his weapon with him at all times. Jefferson kept his gun with Prater's. All he had was the heavy wrench that he gripped before him with both hands.
Meg?
Wagner moved back a step, keeping in line with Jefferson, moving toward Prater.
Want to tell me what's going on?
She saw Cho walking slowly backward to the shelter. He crouched down smoothly, reaching behind him into the tent for the gun she knew he stashed in a pocket by the opening. Everyone stand down.
Fuck that,
Jefferson said, hefting the wrench.
Those are guns, Prater said.
Let me find out what's going on. Everyone, just give me a minute. Jefferson spat between his feet.
Yeah, because I'd hate to get any bad news today.
Lule. Meg sidled up to him, keeping her movements small and her eyes on the soldiers.
Talk this to Meg. What the hell is this?
Lule stomped his foot, obviously frustrated since he'd been trying in vain to get her attention. He jabbed his fist again toward the landing slab.
Not good, bad.
His fist moved in a jagged pattern in the air.
Bad. Very.
What's bad? The ship?
Jefferson.
He banged his meaty forearms together.
Jefferson?
She followed his hand again as his fist drew jagged lines in the air. He pointed to the slab and banged his arms together again. It's the slab. We've damaged the slab.
That pisses them off?
Jefferson asked with a harsh laugh.
That? That's what it takes to get these ugly monkeys pissed off?
Jefferson,
Wagner warned.
This isn't the time.
Shit.
Jefferson spun away from the captain, letting the wrench swing free from one hand.
Time. Time is the one thing we've got boatloads of. I mean, oops, can't say boatloads, can we?
His voice grew louder as he let the weight of the wrench spin him around.
We can't put boats in your fancy translation program, can we, Meg? Because they don't know what boats are. They've never built a goddamn boat, and since they don't know how to swim, we don't get to get back on our little boat, do we?
He stopped spinning, the wrench banging against his shin.
Hey, question for you. If they don't know what a boat is, what word do you suppose they're using to say ship? Banana? Underpants? Lavender?
Jefferson.
Wagner moved closer to him, putting himself between the geologist and the slowly approaching soldiers.
Knock it off.
Sorry, Captain, just free thinking, you know.
His Galen drawl got thicker as he loosed a wide, stupid-looking grin.
That's what we're gonna have to do, aren't we? Just like old Meg there. Think outside the box. Think like we never thunk before, right, Meg? Get inside those hairy little skulls since we're gonna be stuck here with them for the rest of our freaking lives.
Meg clenched her fists,